As noted, I'm with Alta Planning and Design, and we are a private transportation planning firm that focuses on bicycling and walking. Our mission is to create active communities where walking and cycling are healthy, normal, fun, and safe parts of everyday life. So health is really at the core of our mission. I don't have any disclosures as well. No relationships to disclose as part of this presentation. So today I am really going to be talking about how to kind of value walking and bicycling in terms of economics. We can talk about the relationship between health and bicycling and walking fairly easily in a qualitative way. But one of the things that we've found in working with communities all over the country is that money still talks, and that in making decisions around transportation, it can be very important to make that economic argument and make the economic argument around health. So I'm going to talk a little bit about why we want to talk about economic benefits, about a benefits estimation methodology that we use. It's just one. We use publicly available data. And then just some specific points on estimating health benefits. So as I said, we work throughout the country as a planning and design firm. We're working with counties, cities, public health, all over on bicycle and pedestrian master plans, on complete streets implementation, a lot of different types of projects related to bicycling and walking. But in almost every case, we find that there is some pushback from different parts of the community related to investment in bicycling and walking. Nationally, only about 2% of our transportation funds go to bicycling and walking, even though in some communities it can be upwards of 20% of people that are using active modes. So there is, not only is there a lack of funding, but there is still a sentiment that bicycling and walking is kind of a fringe transportation mode. Like, well, we'll do that, we'll pay for those things if everything else gets done. If every other project that we're interested in for transportation gets completed, then we might add some funding for bicycling and walking. So adding the economic frame provides a different discussion tool for elected officials to talk about return on investment and to talk about the other reasons why you may want to include bicycling and walking in your bigger picture of transportation investment. We've seen it work very successfully. A couple of examples just up on the screen are large Tiger Grant projects. Is everyone familiar with the Tiger program? It's a national transportation funding program that's competitive, and communities all over the country apply for grant funding, and there is a benefit cost analysis requirement. And traditionally, bicycle and pedestrian projects have not had great cost benefit analysis associated with them, and so part of what we have been working in the field is making sure that bicycle and pedestrian projects do have good cost benefit analysis and can compete at a national level for these funds. So one of the things that we also run into is that we can talk about all these great benefits in a qualitative way related to bicycling and walking. We know that if more people are using active modes and there's not as many single occupant vehicles, it's pretty well understood. Nobody denies that that's going to improve air quality. And it can also potentially increase traffic safety and can increase the transportation capacity of your whole transportation system. We know that if people are walking and cycling, they're participating in physical activity, and that's something we, in public health, we really want to see people being more active. But the question is then, you know, for an elected official or a community, what's that worth? That's great. But if we have to make decisions about transportation investment, what is it worth to have a healthier community? What exactly is it worth to have better air quality? So we really work on showing them the money and figuring out ways to take the information that we know about who may be walking and cycling in that community, and if we invest in transportation, what additional folks we could get walking and bicycling in the community, and trying to create a dollar value associated with that increased physical activity, with those increased people walking and bicycling, with reduction of single occupant vehicles. As I said, we have been very successful in helping many communities fund projects by really giving them a clear cost-benefit analysis. In almost every case, when we have been able to clearly show health benefits, air quality benefits, the economic argument becomes the one that people latch onto, becomes the piece that people really understand. All of the work around the qualitative benefits is fantastic, but in transportation, still that economic argument becomes the piece that folks really want to hear, and that public health can move forward and say, this is this really is an economic benefit to the community. Sorry, I have a cold, and my voice is kind of losing. So just getting into the way that our methodology works to develop a benefits analysis, we really take two pieces to create a monetary number, and that's the actual numbers, the people that are bicycling and walking, the activity, and then we take multipliers to look at. So if we have sorry, if we have a demand a mode share, a number of people that we know are walking and bicycling in the community, we can then create a multiplier of benefits based on either air quality benefits or potentially increased physical activity. So I'll go a little bit into how we actually do that. There's two types of economic benefits that we use in the modeling. One is the per-user benefits, so that's looking at healthcare cost savings, potential recreational benefits. We can also look at tourism spending, visitor spending in a community, or at businesses located along a new corridor. And then there's per-mile benefits, which include also crash reduction, congestion reduction, air quality benefits as well. So the way that we as a firm really work on benefits valuations is that we use national data sets that have been peer reviewed, so that we're looking at not only using those national data sets to create the numbers, those pieces of activity that we're interested in, the actual numbers of people walking and bicycling, but then we're also using peer-reviewed studies from public health and from transportation to get the multipliers that we're using in the model. The reason that I keep emphasizing this publicly available data set is because, you know, Alta is a private firm. People hire us to do this, but this isn't something that anyone couldn't start to take on. We're using all publicly available data. We're using peer-reviewed research, and our interest is really in getting more folks in public health to be thinking about how you can value these numbers and be making the economic benefit argument. I'm going to skip over this slide. I went through my presentation last night and realized that I was going to talk too long if I gave you every detail about the benefits methodology. So this gives kind of an overview of the existing methodology, and where it starts is the employed population, college population, and K-12 population. We're looking at identifying the numbers of people who would be bicycling and walking, and so we start with American Community Survey data, five-year estimates, because it's the most consistent data out there for commute data. From that, we get our commute journey to work information. From the National Household Transportation Survey, we can get information about the college population and their journey to school. And then there's also numbers related to the K-12 population. And with all of these numbers in the middle, it is possible to get more detailed information at the local level, but we typically use national estimates because a lot of local jurisdictions won't have like a local travel model. But sometimes there will be, for example, a local Safe Routes to School program that may be able to tell us that there's a different percentage of children that are walking and biking to school in that community. From those numbers, we then take extrapolation and weighting, again, from the National Household Transportation Survey primarily to get trip purposes and average trip lengths for the type of trip so that we know in a community how long a typical bike trip is or how long a typical walk trip or transit trip is. And from all of that information, we start to estimate the annual activity. So through all of this, we're just getting that first part. What do we think that annual activity is? So we work on kind of creating an estimate of demand for bicycling and walking, and then from that, we're adding multipliers to get those specific benefits. So how do we then kind of jump from this number of people bicycling and walking to a health benefit? A kind of obvious piece is that bicycling and walking really increases activity or can increase activity. So we know that there is a specific cost associated with physical inactivity. The Centers for Disease Control has been doing a lot of research over the last number of years about what is that actual cost? Can we put a dollar figure to that cost for communities? Can we understand what those individuals, you know, if they're physically inactive and we know that there's a percentage of the population that's inactive, what does that mean in terms of economics for the community? So these are just some statistics about physical inactivity across the U.S. And again, the numbers can be kind of staggering. And when we're talking about transportation, infrastructure, and funding, we need to have some numbers that are pretty big in order to make the case. So what we do is we really estimate the healthcare cost savings associated with the amount of existing and potential physical activity from walking and cycling. So this table just shows a little bit of information about how we might do that in estimating from that information that I showed about getting activity numbers. So we look at trip distance, and we know, sorry, you guys, the voice is just not working this morning. We know that we have trip distances and we have average speeds, and we can, from that, estimate the increased amount of physical activity if we have a number that we can estimate for increased numbers of people walking and cycling. So we have evolved the multipliers we use related to health benefits over time based on changes in research in public health. We used to use a number that broke down medical care costs, and now we're using a single number that's based on the some research at East Carolina University and the physical inactivity cost calculator. Is anyone familiar with this work? Yeah. So it's a gentleman, David Chenoweth, has developed the physical inactivity cost calculator. And right now, it will help you create a number, a per-person number of physical inactivity. And we found, actually, that we feel like the numbers that come out, if you just plug in numbers, are pretty high. So we go to BERFIS data, actually, and get the percentage of physical inactivity from that data set to understand what's happening in the specific community that we're working in. So this is just an example from New Orleans that if you looked at the existing number of people that are physically inactive in the community currently, based on BERFIS data, you'd get a huge, huge number of the cost of physical inactivity for New Orleans, and this is an annual estimate. Excuse me. So what we do in our benefits model is then we start to talk about if we were to increase the mode share. And we know that there's, let's just give an estimate of, say, 600 additional people cycling in a year. We take the percentage the same percentage that we know of the community that would have been physically inactive, and take that number from that new subset, so assuming that those that the same percentage of new cyclists would be, if you took the population as a whole, that same percentage would be new folks being physically active. And then we calculate a number based on that new physical activity, and that can be used to then create that argument around that this is a cost savings to the community, this is an economic benefit to the community that you wouldn't necessarily see. It's not something that you would be able to attribute in any other way. I'm going to skip to the conclusion. Sorry about my voice. So the point that I really want to make throughout this whole process is that using existing data, using all the research in public health to really help make this economic argument for active transportation can be incredibly powerful and can be a force for increased investment in bicycling and walking. Expressing the benefits as a monetized value is something that elected officials, is something that planners can really stand behind and bring into the transportation planning framework and really bring into the discussions about funding priorities and investment in the community. Thank you. If you want more detail on the benefits estimation methodology, I'm happy to talk with anyone, and don't let my voice stop you from asking the questions. I apologize. Sure, go ahead. Like you set me up really well by saying that in your presentation.
I have two questions. One is, it sounds like a mean one, but it isn't. What do you do about the risks, costing and the risks? Because I'm assuming all you need is two more cycle injuries and those benefits get blown out of the
What we do when we're working with communities on it is, you know, I'll be honest, we don't necessarily do anything in the modeling to assume the risks. What we do is we talk about all the assumptions made, and that's one of them, is talking about, like, this doesn't take into account, yes, and that there's all sorts of issues out of control of kind of the benefits analysis. But that's one of the things, is to be very clear about the assumptions. And I should, sorry. I should also say that we strive to use very conservative numbers so that we feel like we can really stand behind them and really talk about all the assumptions in each step of the model. So I actually think the benefits are probably higher than what we come up with in the model, but we really want to use very conservative frames for it. Any other questions? Well, some of the we've done it for all the TIGER applications that we've worked on, because cost benefit analysis is required. So Birmingham, Alabama, Northwest Arkansas, Coachella Valley. We've also done it for a number, and I didn't go into the differences in the trails economic model, but we've also done it for the Wolf River Greenway. I'm sorry, my memory is failing me. You know, I don't think we have done it for any safe routes projects, but I think we should. Any other questions? So if we go back to here, this at the end of this number, we we typically have sort of a demand estimate for what would happen if we made changes to the infrastructure network in a community. You could also do this with your existing mode share information. But in that number, there'll be an increase in the percentage of people bicycling and walking, or the numbers of people bicycling and walking. And what we do to estimate the increase in physical activity is we assume that again, it's all about the assumptions, right? We take the number or the percentage of the community that was typically physically inactive. So say it's 25% of the community's physically inactive. And we use that number to estimate that percentage would be the new physically active people, and we could get a percentage based on that. Does that make sense? Yeah. For the other speakers. Go ahead.
So, and I'm sorry, I missed the other speakers, so if it applies to you, please jump in. So I was really interested in the lost productivity, and is this a real opportunity to work with local employers and get them, this is their bottom line too, and so especially here where kind of employers are reaching into your health care.
Yeah.
Have they been receptive to this, or do you have thoughts on how we can better engage them in that?
You know, we haven't done any specific modeling for private employers, but I know in the discussion about employee wellness that active transportation comes up, and I believe there are studies out there that show, I mean, certainly for kids, that if you're using active modes, you concentrate longer, you have, you know, less sick days. There's a lot of, it's not necessarily bicycling and walking, but related to increased physical activity. So I think the argument could certainly be made, and we could do more to work with private employers in that realm.